מבטל את גייר. כפי שהעבר אינו נכנס לכאן ישראל עניין שכר ועונש. ומה שאומרים לו רצונך שתיכנס אינו אלא כדי שלא תהיה תבילתו לשם עבדות בעל כוחו, שאם לא כן תבילתו לשם עבדות אינו כלום. לפיכך כשמשתחרר צריך תבילה בני שלושה. אבל גוי שבא להתגייר אומרים לו מה ראית ושמתבילים אותו לשם גירות. אצטרה, ולפיכך בעבד צריך שיקיים מצוות המצוות עליו, כדי שיהיה לנדבר שקיבל עליו אמנת הדיווחית ומצוות קבלת מצוות התורה, ולגוי שבוא לתגייר, אפילו אם נדע שלא מקיים מצוות התורה, תבילתו לשם גירות הרי היא כמפרש שקיבל עליו, אם לא שפירה חוץ מדבר זה. So he first is taking the same position that we saw in Chaim Moser, unless the Geir says that I'm accepting all of Judaism except for the laws of Shatness, you don't, it's a valid conversion. Teda ol. Sha'arei v'goy habolet gayer, modi'im oto ikrei hadat, shu yichud Hashem v'yisor avodah zarah. We let him know the principles of Judaism, which are monotheism and the prohibitions of idolatry. ומעריכים אמור בדבר זה, this is all from the Rambam, remember, ואילו בקבלת המצוות מודיעים לו מקצת המצוות קלות וחמורות, ומודיעים אותו מקצת העונשין של המצוות, שאומרים לו קודם שבאת ומדזו אכלת חלב ואי אתה אנוש כרת, ואין מרבין עליו ואין מדקדקין עליו להודיעו כל דקדי עונשין. דשם הכוונתו לשמיים, מכאן מפורש יוצא, שאין דורשים ממנו לקיים המצוות, ואף לא צריך שבית דין ידעו שיקיימים אותם. ואם לאו כן, אם דין לא כן, לא יתקבלו גרים בישראל, ומי יערוב שגוי זה יהיה נאמן לכל מצוות התורה. How can you possibly be sure that this particular guy is willing to accept all of the מצוות התורה? אלא מה שמודיעים לו מקצת מצוות, הוא כדי שאם ירצה יפרוש. You give him an opportunity to change his mind. וכדי שלא יוכל לומר אחר כך, כאילו ידעתי, לא הייתי מתגייר. וזהו לכתחילה. אבל בדיעבד, אם לא הדיעו, אינו מעכב, מכל האמור למדנו שאין תנאי קיום המצוות מעכב את הגירות אפילו לכתחילה. The condition that you'll be sure that this person fulfill all the mitzvot is not a sine qua non, even lechatchila. So what the Rav David Hoffman was hinting at, and only applying in the case of a safek geirut, Rabbi Uziel is saying very explicitly. Ve'od la'aya machra'at mipsak maran, ve'kevan shetaval ha'reinu k'Yisrael, shim chazar l'surahu k'Yisrael mumash, shim kidesh k'dushav k'dushim, ve'apilu chazar v'yavar el'irim ha'reinu k'Yisrael mumash, k'dushav k'dushim, וביו הגרקתה שלכן קימו שלמה ושמשן את נשותיהם, אף אגב שנגלה סופן, וסופן הוכיח על תחילתם. מכל האמור ומדובר, תורה יוצאה שמותר ומצווה לקבל גרים ובגיורת, אף על פי שידוע לנו שלא יקיימו כל המצוות. משום שסופן יבואו לידי קיומן, ומצווים אנו לפתוח להם פתח כזה, ואם לא יקיימו את המצוות, הם יישאו את עוונם, ואנו נקיים. So he's saying, not only is it permissible, but it's obligatory upon us to accept these as converts, even though we know that they're not going to fulfill the commandment, because this is going to lead, hopefully, eventually, to fulfillment of the commandments. And therefore, והנני מעתיק פה מה שכתבתי בעניין זה באותו שאלה עצמו בעניין קבלת גרים חידש מערכת גדולה בספרה לומר שבזמן הזה שאנו רואים ויודעים והדבר מפורסם וגלוי שרובה ורובה לגרים אינם שומעים מצוות התורה אפילו זמן קצר הלכך אין לקבל בזמן הזה וכן כתב במכתבו עליי ביום ג' שבט ענה דענה דאמרי על כן העלת, דענה דאמרי אם כן נעלת דלת מפני גרים שלא לקבל ישראל גרים כלל, אפילו נתבר לנו בהחלט שהוא מתגייר לשם שמיים. אבל מדברי רבותינו זה למדנו שמצווה לקבל גרים, ולהכניסם תחת כנפי השכינה, לפי שהקדוש ברוך הוא אוהב גרים, וציווה על הונאתה. ואל תשיבנו ממה שכתב בימי שלמה לא קיבלו גרים, שהרי כתבו התוספות, והיד הפרק בייס לשבס, בטוח היה הלל בסופו לשמיים. ומדבריהם מוכח, this is an absolutely amazing phrase,
The sofo l'shem shamayim sagi, and that's not what I meant, afal pi she'ein sofo l'kayim mitzvot. That the l'shem shamayim does not mean necessarily l'shem kabbalah mitzvot.
What happened to that view?
Well, he just rejects that view entirely. The al kol panim the sofo l'kayim afal pi l'kayim mitzvot. Yom l'maskan zot yotzei shegam b'mei d'vei l'shlono kiblu gerim shevius al shem shamayim u'velu zem ozal lohan higla kadosh baruch hu yisrael levei tumot ela kedei shiyitzu ha'el gerim she'ne'emar uzra'ata li ba'eretz kula, etc., etc.
Judaism doesn't welcome.
Well, we had a long discussion as to whether they do or they don't. But we see from this that Rav Uziel is saying that the notion of L'shem Shamayim is not identical with the notion of Kabbalat Ol Mitzvah.
Isn't it unusual for the Sephardic rabbis where we're not confronted as much?
But he was very much confronted with this.
Where in their own, like in the North Africa and so forth, assimilation wasn't so
prevalent. In Saloniki, he was unfortunately very confronted with this.
Was it in fact easier to be Megayer through the Sephardi Yanam? I don't know, but in the Rabbanut and in the Ashkenazi actually in Eretz Yisrael once they had landed there? And
I don't know the practical facts. What I'm simply saying is...
You mean modern times?
I guess. Or even... even just before the state. I mean, I wonder if he had this path that was easier than following the Ashkenazi Rabbanut.
Don't follow it. That's not like it. Party. Minor reform.
Bring the tuba with you.
At least he doesn't waffle, you know.
He doesn't waffle. Oh. But the point is this: we see that. So what Rabbi Zvi'el was saying is that l'shem shamayim l'chud and l'shem kabbalah sol mitzvos l'chud. It's conceivable that a conversion can be sincere without necessarily being involved in Kabbalah sol mitzvos. What does sincere mean? I mean, what does it mean to be sincere? What kind of Judaism are they accepting? Well, that's a difficult problem. But presumably, if someone wants to be a member of the Jewish community, moves to Israel, his children are going into the Israeli army, casts his fate with the fate of the Jewish people, presumably that's a test of sincerity.
Like we saw at the beginning of the year,
like we saw,
which was much looser and much less technically.
Right. So what you see is that Rav Uziel is not heavily involved in ideological issues. His community was never split along ideological lines. You had in the Sephardic community many non-observant members and perhaps even a majority of people who may not have been Shomrei Mitzvos, but they never constituted an ideological barrier. So therefore, for Rav Uziel, the notion of L'shem Shamayim does not necessarily mean L'shem Kabbalah Sol Mitzvot. How to deal with this question, not in Eretz Yisrael, how to deal with this question of what L'shem Shamayim means for a conversion in the United States, for example, where being a member of the Jewish community isn't such a clear notion, that's more difficult. And I think that it has to be left up to the local Beis Din to decide what constitutes sincerity. I myself would, find it a lot easier to deal with this question within the context of Israel. Someone moving to Israel, settling in Israel, living as part of the Jewish community, undertaking all of the obligations, and therefore drop, as Rav Uziel is clearly saying, this requirement, l'chadchila even, of Kabbalah sol mitzvot. So to summarize, Rav Uziel represents a chain of tradition. He goes one step beyond, perhaps, what the previous poskim would say, but is in a chain of poskim, which seems to me is an inevitable conclusion if you're trying to deal with the kinds of problems that he was dealing with then and we're dealing with today. For him, the ideological component was missing, and therefore he could come to a straight, clear decision. The Lichtenstein Rabbanim, up until, say, the middle of the century, on the one hand, they dealt with this question ideologically, because for them, the notion was, in some distant land, the fight between Reform and Orthodox, so they sort of had to deal with their own local maskilim, and with the fights internal to the Jewish community, which were purely ideological fights. And therefore, they couldn't, as clearly as Rabuziel, come out with a heter like this. On the other hand, they said, don't make a fuss over it. So if for the Chaim Moser, a right-wing conservative rabbi would convert these people, and there was a kosher bezdin, and there was mila and tefila, and in a kosher mikvah, don't rock the boat. That's not a tenable position, but at least it's a position that one can live with. Unfortunately, the situation didn't stop there. The situation became highly politicized. We saw that already in Rav Kook, whereas on the one hand he says that you should turn a blind eye, and on the other hand he gives a yashar koach to those who are raising it. The Lubavitcher, for example, have made a terribly political issue of what constitutes Mihu Yehudi and what constitutes a valid conversion or what doesn't constitute a valid conversion. So unfortunately, this problem has become bound up absolutely with politics, with internal Israeli politics as to which of the religious parties is more right-wing on this particular issue than which other, and the situation is a mess. My personal point of view is to agree with Rabuziel. It was the position that the Rambam took, it not as far, it's a step beyond it, it was once something that Rabbi Hoffman was going towards, and if one has a legitimate definition of what constitutes a potentially sincere conversion, even though this may not involve Kabbalah's own mitzvahs, let's just accept it and do it that way. In practice, what's happening is that the official, if we take a look at the later tshuvas, Rav Herzog more or less retreats to the position of Rav Shlomo Kluger, but is not as explicit as Rav Uziel. And the latest tshuvos that I cite, for example, from the Tzitz Eliezer of Waltenberg, are completely machmir on all issues, including rejecting Rav Shlomo Kluger's tshuva. So what these people are doing are essentially being hypocritical, it seems to me. On the one hand, they make this into a political issue and reject it. On the other hand, I don't believe that any of the rabbinical courts in Eretz Yisrael really strictly or uniformly enforce this policy of Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvahs. I mean, the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are coming to Eretz Yisrael and nobody's asking a question. So it's another instance in which the involvement of politics into the halachic arena has been destructive, both to politics and to the halacha. As I said, for years I had discussions on this point with the Rav. I was pressing exactly the position of Rav Uziel, namely that L'shem Shamayim doesn't necessarily mean L'shem Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvahs, and I could not get him to budge on this issue. But my own particular personal opinion is that we should accept the psak of Rav Uziel, which is in the tradition of something we've seen for a 3,000-year history, and we should eliminate hypocrisy from the decision-making process. We should say what we mean and do what we say, and I think Rav Uziel gives us, on this particular issue, a basis for procedure. Unfortunately, these tshuvas of Rav Uziel are from the early 50s, and we don't have anyone who is as courageous as he on these matters in the last 40 years. Okay, I think this is historically the longest time we've ever devoted to one single topic, but we've covered a period of some 3,000 years.
Wouldn't you say that the problems that the Rav had and other rabbis with telephone calls on a Saturday night, and the rabbi's president of the shul, his daughter is getting married, and he has to perform the marriage, and he's the president of the shul, and if he doesn't perform the marriage, he's going to lose his job. Give me an answer right away. These are all post facto. I mean, it's not lechatchila. These are all problems that develop.
Excuse me. All the conversions that the Boston Rebbe performs are none of them have to do with marriages or potential mixed marriages.
No, I mean
the
marriages were taking place, and then they had to check out who was getting married.
Right. So the question is, do you face up to this problem?
Well, he faced up here. The Rav said no, probably.
You know, the Rav told me that when he says that he doesn't want to give his okay, he knows that he is not causing personal hardship.
Well, this rabbi got fired. What do you mean? He was fired because he wouldn't perform the wedding for his president's daughter.
Do you know a specific story like that?
He told me.
You're making up a story.
No, the Rav told me that story.
What I'm saying is that on this one particular issue, I mean, I've had many walks home from shul on Shabbos. I pressed very hard on this one particular issue. I pressed on a number of other issues, but on this one particular issue, the Rav, in the tradition of the Litvisha Rabbanim, regarded this as an ideological question. What is the definition of a Jew? If the definition of a Jew is Shmiras Mitzvos, then how can you possibly accept anything else? And since he did not have to bear the burden of the suffering of the families, because they could always go to someone who was a little to the left of him, then he just didn't come out with it. And I'm saying this is not, he didn't allow a kula here.
Well, I mean, in that way, a little hypocrisy is not necessarily a bad thing. It allows you both to sort of mediate both.
Well,
desire is to mediate the tension, to have, you know, to know that the personal suffering is not going to happen, but also to hold the line.
Yeah, but if you're the Rav HaRashi of Eretz Yisrael, for example, as Rav Uziel was, or if you were the head of all of Rabbanim, like Chaim Moser was, where your decision is in fact law, then you shouldn't do this. I'm sorry, I do not accept that. One has to deal with, this is a generic problem, it's not a problem that you can escape from by saying let somebody else handle it. And we see that Rav Uziel had the courage here on this issue, where Rav Kook was in the tradition of... Rav Kook was not a unbrave man. He took many, many courageous stands, but I think that this stand and his public stand against the rights of women to vote are two major errors, or at least two issues in which one can strongly disagree with ASJ.
Handling the Russian immigration.
I think they're doing what Rav Kook said, we turn a blind eye.
Yeah. I mean, you could characterize the position more charitably. I used to say, in principle, we think it should not happen, as the shulas do. In principle, we think it shouldn't happen. We're not going to take issue with the practice.
But they do take issue with the practice. I mean, they raise a fuss in the Knesset, and they try to make an amendment in the Miyuhi Yuhi law.
That's a later development.
Well, it's within Rav Kook. We saw that it was a Yashakoach L'misha Omid B'Paretz. Whereas Rav Uziel is dealing with this problem, he tries to come to an understanding, just as we saw that with Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer 100 years earlier did. One has to try to look to this as to the future of the Jewish people as a whole, and come and deal with this in a problem with some kind of historical perspective. And since there's a basis to be made, you should say what you're doing and do it. So I have great admiration for Rav Uziel and all of his psukim, and on this one in particular. And here I think, as I said before, I think the basis for this dichotomy was that the problem when it originated with the Litvisha Rabbanim was primarily an ideological one. Because for them this was some fight between the reforms and the Orthodox out in the West somewhere, in Western Europe or in America, so they could afford to
to have this in Hungary too? I mean, even though they were reformers there, I understood they didn't really assimilate to that extent.
I don't know the history. I don't know the Hungarian rabbi. One of the sources here is the Maram Schiff, but I haven't studied his particular chillas. In general, I have difficulty assuming. After the Hassan Sofer, I understand very well, but the later Hungarian Rabbani, especially the more recent ones, I have a difficulty in absorbing their tradition.
You think Rabbi Uziel would have responded in an environment like we're living in America the same way he did then?
He did.
He did where?
In Saloniki in 1920s and in Eretz Yisrael in the 1950s.
Saloniki was then like America is now?
I don't know what I don't know what the extent
was. That's
what
I heard. I was there and I was like 20 years ago. But what the rabbi said was that there was a very serious problem there. Mm-hmm. Of, even though it was a very intensely Jewish port, it was a very serious problem of intermarriage and all that sort of thing. And
yeah, but how un-Jewish would these guys?
Yeah, and Sephardim generally, who are not from, much, much more traditional. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, there can be a Shem Shemayim there, but...
Well, as I said, the problem of how to define the Shem Shemayim in Golos is very hard for me to consider. In other words, what it means to be Jewish when there's no Kabbalah on mitzvahs, I agree with you. In the United States, that's very hard to define. In Germany, it meant paying taxes to the Jewish community and going to the temple, and there was some sense of identity. In the United States, I don't know what that would mean, how to define it. I think that's something that has to be left up to the local courts. But certainly someone who's moving to Eretz Yisrael. Remember, we saw that already in Masechet Gelin, that Eretz Yisrael has the effect of being Matayim Gelin. Remember, that was a fundamental passage that we saw in the Masechet Gelin. And therefore, I would distinguish between the problems of Gelin when it comes to moving to Eretz Yisrael and here.
I'll tell you something that happened today.